drink your fucking Sprite.
Okay. I think it's caffeine-free.
Shut up. I drink your milkshake. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And today we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to both of us, but for almost entirely different reasons.
Almost? Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, we're on, well, it's not opposite reasons. The same side of the coin, but on different spectrums.
Yep.
But we're talking about... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say it's shoes, but it's not. I was about to lie to our audience. I'm sorry.
No, don't do that. But we're going to talk about live music today.
Live music, yeah.
And so when I say we're on different ends of the spectrum, Jim and I realized that in discussing our experiences with live music, we both have experiences seeing live music.
Well,
we both have experiences playing live music. But my experience is more on the viewing of live music, and Jim's is more on the playing of live music.
Well, and conveniently, about a month and a half ago, we had a weekend where we did each of those things. I played at Battle of the Bards with Kaylee, and you can see that video on the channel. And you went and saw Black fucking Sabbath.
I went and saw Sabbath. They were in Hamilton, and I mean, I don't want to brag. I've seen them like...
But it's Black Sabbath.
Three times in the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, they're on their The End tour, which is, according to them, it's going to be the last time they do any kind of major world touring, largely because Tony Iommi has recently had medical problems, and so his body, he just can't physically do it anymore. I expect them, they're probably going to play a few like really big one-off shows here and there, but I decided, you know what, I may have seen them twice already, but I enjoyed both times. It was immensely rewarding, and so why not go and check them out? So yeah, this on that weekend, I went and
I gave a pretty good show at Bard's, but it wasn't Black Sabbath good. I will admit that.
There was probably nobody yelling at, "Let me see your hands!"
Oh God, that would have been amazing. Yeah. I'm going to do that next time. In that voice.
Ozzy, the guy, one of the guys that I went with, he counted it, because we realized that that's something that Ozzy says a lot. And he counted roughly 27 times in about an hour and a half show where Ozzy asked to see our hands. And so, in the end, the three of us at the end of our row were just like, jazz hands or whatever.
Spirit fingers!
Giving Ozzy what he was yelling for. So, but yes, we're going to talk about live music today. But first, we should definitely make like a large polar bear and perhaps break the ice.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Huck, what is the first complete song you could play?
So in this case, I'm going to talk about a guitar, and I'm not going to talk about like Yankee Doodle or anything like that.
Like first like single.
Yeah. So the first single turns out to be Gone Away by The Offspring.
Nice.
And that's largely thanks to Rocksmith. So,
so this is very recent then.
This is fairly, I mean,
oh, I didn't know that.
For the longest time, I could play a lot of like Metallica riffs, but I could never connect all of the riffs together to be able to do the coherent song. So the closest I came was Enter Sandman. I could do almost everything, but it got a little muddy in the middle. And
it always does.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, bridges and whatnot can be kind of weird. And I haven't played it in a while. So maybe if I, you know, just spend a couple hours on it, I could probably nail it out now, because I'm a little bit more skilled than I was when I was first noodling on it. But recently I shelled out and I bought Rocksmith plus the cable for my console. And then I went on a little bit of a download spree and got a whole bunch of songs that were not in the game. And I remembered trying to teach my buddy Gone Away. So it was a song, it was one of the first songs that my buddy Doug and I gold starred on
Rock Band.
Me on guitar, him on bass. Although I think I also gold starred it on drums as well, because it's not the most complicated.
At the same time as guitar?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm not that talented. So we did fairly well on Rock Band with it, and then when we flirted with the idea of creating a fictional metal band, I tried to teach him how to play the bass, with Gone Away, because it's a fairly simple chord progression. So I was teaching him the root notes of all the guitar parts. And in that, I could play the riffs, but I had a really hard time with the main lead lick that I just couldn't work out how to get the fingerings to work out. So fast forward, you know, 5 or so years, and so now I got Rocksmith, and I downloaded it, and I started playing it, and thankfully it gives you guidance in terms of how to position your fingerings in order to play those complicated parts. Plus, it has the wonderful chunk and loop section where you can slow down the tempo and change the difficulty, and then, you know, if you hit your successes, it'll give you the next evolution in speed and complexity. And I just eventually built it up, and then suddenly one day I tried it out and it scored me at 100%. I mean, I know I miss notes, but it must score you in terms of, like, there's a mastery mode, which I'm sitting at like 94%, and then there's, I guess, the completion for the average player, which is, I think, where the 100% comes in. And then on Saturday, just this past Saturday of filming, I got 101% on it.
Ooh.
So I don't know what's going on with the game. Maybe I broke it with my awesomeness, but yeah, apparently I'm doing fairly well. So that was a very long-winded icebreaker of how and what my first song was.
Ryan Huckle, King of the Long-Winded Icebreaker. I didn't realize it was that recent, though. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I started playing guitar when I was about 15, and my friends taught me a couple of songs. I learned to play a couple of songs in guitar class, like Bad Moon Rising and Doll Parts by Hole. Of all the songs you could teach, it was 1997, okay? Mm-hmm. It was a weird year. It was a weird time. Mm-hmm. But when I was 16, the first song that I learned to play and sing at the same time, which is what I sort of count as the first song that I learned to play, because I don't play lead, I play rhythm, Round Here by Counting Crows. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard, but it was one of the first step on that road of, oh, I can do these things at the same time like other people. Mm-hmm. Also, FYI, if you start learning to play bass in your fake metal band, Steel Panther rules say that you now have a real metal band. Like,
fair enough.
If any band is a fake real band, it's clearly Steel Panther.
Yeah.
And they're a real band.
No, that is true. That is true.
Link below for that time that Steel Panther invited a guy on, or got a guy on stage with him, and he rocked through Eyes of the Panther. And you're like, damn, they're a real band. Steel Panther's amazing. Mm-hmm. But like, bands I would love to see live. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mine was Round Here by the Counting Crows. Because when I was a 16-year-old boy, that was a song that deeply spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And also, I couldn't learn to play Colorblind on guitar because I couldn't transcribe the piano piece to a guitar piece, and I didn't have the internet because it basically hadn't been invented yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But so, seeing live music. I mean, you went to see Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the first... That was the latest show you've seen. What was the first show you ever saw?
So, okay, there's probably shows that I saw before this, or at least performances.
First concert that went to.
But the first concert that I distinctly remember, and I distinctly remember going to, was Britney Spears.
No judgment.
Yeah, no judgment. There's probably... somebody, like... John, my boss, who listens to the podcast, is probably laughing at me right now.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, but the long story short is I was visiting family, and I was visiting for a month. They needed something to do with me for the month. So
I should interject by saying what I mean by I'm excited for that is leave Ryan alone.
Oh no.
I apologize for anyone wearing headphones because I just leave Ryan alone into your molars.
No, it's okay. John. Teases me, but in a constructive way that makes me thicker skinned and sometimes lash out at him.
Excellent.
Anyway, so yeah, I was visiting family, and they wanted to plan out things to do over the month, so different things got scheduled, like trips to see other family close by in Ontario, going to see Phantom of the Opera in Toronto, and
the yearly pilgrimage to Britney Spears.
Yeah, and they said, well, you are, and I was like, 11 or 12 at the time. They're like, you're around the age, and my future brother, stepbrother, I was going to say brother-in-law, but my future stepbrother, he's apparently into Britney Spears or something, sure. And I never knew who she was. I was living in Texas at the time, so different demographics and whatnot. I'd never heard of her. But they're like, yeah, I know, this is what all the boys your age like. For probably obvious reasons, but, you know, whatever. And, so yeah, we ended up seeing her at the Molson Amphitheater.
Nice.
So that was my first concert. But the first concert that I count was my graduation gift from my parents, and that was when I saw Metallica in, like, 03, 04. So, so that's my first real concert, if anybody asks. So, Jim, what was your first live show?
My first live show that I went to... My first one that I went to was a school trip concert. Mm. But my first one that I went to, sort of my own volition, was actually one of those free music festivals that occurs every once in a while in big cities. And so mine was Beach Fest, which had... when would that have been? That would have been year 2000.
Okay.
So... Collective Soul was there. Jan Arden was there. She was amazing. It was one of those, like, big all-day music festivals, and we were out there all day, and like, it was a huge thing. And the last music that I saw that wasn't that was, like, reasonably large venue that wasn't, like, Poetry Slam or, you know, like, small, like, less than 30 people was Carsey Blanton in November. And the next one that I see will also be Carsey Blanton, probably. Because we're definitely catching something on her next tour. So what is seeing live music like for you? For me, it's, like, really weird, but we'll get to that.
So it was kind of funny when we were doing the pre-show. I hadn't necessarily reflected on it, so it's really hard for me to capture. Because I am definitely... So I go, I participate as a member of the fan or of the audience, but I'm not as emotive as some people are when they go. Like, there are some people who are very excited, like, to the point of they can't...
At a metal concert, I would imagine.
Yeah, where they can't contain themselves in their excitement and how emotive they are. And, you know, the band throws out... all their energy at the crowd, and the crowd, you know, just reflects it and amplifies it back with their own energy, right? I don't know, maybe the cynical side of me of, like, I'm one tiny member of an entire crowd, so I don't necessarily have to cheer louder or clap louder, right? You know,
that's the worst thing. You know what happens if you clap with your hands in your pockets, Ryan? You'll crush your testicles.
Yeah, well, no. I definitely... clap, like, it's not that, but, like, when they're like, I can't hear you, and everybody's like, yeah, like, it's really fun to sit back and not participate in that, because then you get to, like, feel the effect of everybody else yelling and stuff. But so when I go to shows, you'll typically find me in the same spot, which is if I'm not close to the audio guy, because usually at a metal show, you know, the audio guy will be set up.
Well, he's got the best seat in the house.
Yeah, because he's got a... He or she... it's always been he's at my shows, but they got to be able to have frontline access to the full effect of the audio. But so I'll often stand close to the audio guy. But if I'm not, then you're going to find me closer to the back of the venue because... And Doug and I are usually the ones who go to these shows. We're both tall guys, so we don't want to be... blocking anybody's view if we can help it. And we also typically stay away from the pit. I've never really had an interest in being in a mosh pit, and Doug has outgrown his desire to be in a mosh pit. So we usually stay far away from it. Not that we think that there's anything wrong with it, just not for us. We don't feel like being sweaty and bloody and such. So, but yeah, my experience typically is... I enjoy the sonic experience when it's not bad. Like, ACC's got a really... Or the Rogers Center's just got a really bad PA system, in my opinion. So it's just loud and muddied. But I enjoy the Sonic experience. I enjoy the kind of percussive experience with the low bass and how you can feel the music, not in any kind of weird foo-foo way, but literally, like, you can feel the sound waves crushing into your body and vibrating through your hollow cavities. I enjoy that. And I enjoy... Well, and I enjoy hearing the music live that I really enjoy on disc or on MP3. So that's a fun experience. But then the last layer to that is, as a person who tries to play music and as a person who noodles around with riffs, I really enjoy watching the technical aspect of a show. So seeing them playing guitar, seeing them playing the rhythm sections. I don't pick out the flaws in a negative way, but it's always fun to see where they fuck up. So a couple weeks ago, friends of mine were opening for actually a fairly large metal band that I enjoy. So their band was Rippered. They were opening for a band called Trivium, and I'd seen Trivium once before, but Trivium was playing here in Kitchener, so I'm like, yeah, I mean, my buddies are playing, and they're opening for Trivium. Why am I not going? So I went to the show. I remember there was a section, so the bassist's name is Paulo. And Paulo starts playing, and you could see the front man, Matt, who also he plays guitar and sings or vocalizes for the band. You see him, he snaps his head over at Paulo, and he's like, "You're so off." Like, he's pointing at the headstock. Like, "You're so off." And you can hear it, too. Like, this is one of those times where normally you think, like, the bass doesn't really make a difference.
It
like,
makes a difference.
When it's off...
Keeper of the groove. Yeah. You know.
When it's off, it makes a difference. And this is one of the first times where I could hear the bass, because I could hear that it was not where it was supposed to be. And obviously, they're getting, like, not only are they getting it from the speakers, but they're getting it from their inner monitors, right? So he could hear right away that it was, that the bass was playing, it was tuned wrong or out of tune, whatever it happened to be. So you see Paulo, he walks over, he stands in front of the cabinet, and you can see him tuning back up, and he comes out and he starts playing a few notes, and Matt looks over, and he's like, "No, you're so off." And so Paulo goes back, retunes his guitar, looks over, and Matt's just like, "Yeah, okay." So they didn't stop the show. They didn't do anything. Like, this was all on the fly. And thankfully, Trivium has two guitars, then a bass guitar, right? So, I mean, the two guitars were able to fill out the rest of the Sonic experience before Paulo rejoined them on the bass. But I got a kick out of that. I got a kick out of, like, it was probably, like, nobody's fault in particular, just one of those oversight things, you know.
It's live, shit happens.
Yeah, a headstock got bumped or something. And
if you saw Adele's performance at the Grammys...
I did not.
But. One of the things that happened was a piano mic fell inside a piano and hit the strings.
Oh.
And that is bad.
Yeah.
And the result was that, like, they had to, like, cut her audio. And there was a lot of flack about it. And Adele had a tweet about it, I think, the next day. Like, I mean, she was upset about it, but her tweet was, "It's live, shit happens."
Yeah.
Like, I 2 years ago, I think, I was on stage at Nerdfest. And I've told the story before at least once on the podcast, but I broke a string on stage in my first set.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, can't stop the song. Gotta finish the song. And happily, there was another guitarist there to bail me out because I didn't have any spare strings. Now I bring spare strings to every show, and I change my strings 2 weeks before a show.
Yeah.
To make sure that they, not only to make sure that they sound good, but also to make sure that they're not about to break. Because I've been, you know, I'm using my practice strings and they've been on my guitar for, you know, 6 years. But, yeah, no, like, I definitely watch the technical stuff, too, now that I think about it. Like, for me, it's watching bands and trying to sort of steal their power and steal their energy. I watch what their guitarists are doing. I watch where they put their eyes, where they put their heads, what they do with their guitars, how they handle them. And, you know, I'm sort of trying to steal their power. And partly because more often than not, their guitarist is better than me. At least, and certainly more technically proficient. So I want to understand those little tips and tricks. And I don't think there's any better way to do it. Well, apart from, you know, actually learning. Than watching someone try and do it live. because that is the point of stress where, like, this is the real deal. There's no take backs, there's no do overs, and sometimes you need a do over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're reaching the base,
or the recording that made it to the album for Good Riddance.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
one of the most famous examples of dun 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 dun, fuck, dun 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 dun.
Yeah, that's a thing. But no, like when we saw Carsey, there was a point where her audio had to cut out in the middle of a song, and she had to restart it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is part of, I think it is part of being a good audience member to be understanding about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shit happens. Yeah. There are so many moving parts at a live show.
Yeah,
and there are so many moving parts that you don't see. You know, there's tech people running around. There's people who are responsible for arranging the mics, balancing the mics, everything that happens. And it is, I would say, almost always better to, like, laugh about those little moments, but ultimately forget about them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And remember the part where the artist completely effing rocked it.
Yeah.
Because those parts exist too, and it is important not to let the little stuff overshadow the stuff that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that is my sort of experience of seeing live music.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of thing is it helps me realize the stuff that matters.
Mm-hmm.
If you put me in a room with a lot of noise and really nothing to do visually or anything like that, I tend to get overstimulated really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to, I sort of frame it as realizing I have a lot of spare processing cycles, and I start to my brain starts to really go.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a way that's necessarily creative or productive or useful. It just, because I don't have a lot to focus on, I start finding stuff to focus on. And as long as I can keep that sort of turned outward, it's fine.
Hmm.
And the result is that, like, anytime I go to the symphony or the poetry slam or anything like that, like, I always take a ton of notes just about whatever. Half the time they're unintelligible afterward,
mm-hmm.
but I just need that outlet.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm at a music festival with a bunch of people, odds are very good that I'm going to get really irritating really fast. Because I don't have that outlet. And, like, now I know when I bring stuff, like, I do stuff to write with, stuff to channel that. Because if I don't, I'm just going to talk to people, and I'm just going to annoy the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody really wants to talk with me for an hour and a half about nothing while there's a show going on. Like, the symphony is different, because the symphony, you don't freaking talk at the symphony, you don't check your phone.
No.
It's the symphony. You shut up, and you listen.
No.
And really, that's how I try and behave at any concert. This person is pouring their ass out. That's the wrong turn of phrase for that. That was a sentence that just happened, though. But no, they're pouring their energy at the audience, and they've put so much work into this, so much practice into this. Like I said, this is the moment that really matters. And I feel an obligation to be a good audience member, even if I don't like the band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the opening band or whatever, like... I know, like, as an artist, the best thing I can do is be the biggest fan while they're on stage. Because everything I give to them, they're going to give back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is the same thing, like, if I'm opening for somebody or I'm playing a show, is everybody else who I share that stage with, you know, for that night, I am their biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are there to create a show together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same is true of audience members, is that you are creating the show with the band.
Yeah.
That's how you do it as a street performer, too, is your audience is part of the show. They're not the people you do the show for. Mm-hmm. It isn't television. We can see you.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion of being seen, I think, is what really gets me mm-hmm. about live music, which is really weird, because I've been to the symphony a bunch of times, which is completely impersonal. Like, it's beautiful, but the first chair violinist isn't like, yeah, you in the front row! Partly because violins don't make that sound.
Yeah, I imagine there's got to be at least one violinist out there who's like does that sometimes.
100%. I will bet you that person did not stay first chair for very long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've seen some pretty crazy violin stuff. I saw Video Games Live at Center in the Square with the Kitchener Waterloo Orchestra, and they were amazing. But their first year violinist got to rock out. But he did not get to, like, Black Sabbath the audience. He did not get to yell, "Show me your hands!
Show me your hands!"
I really like Mike D from Killswitch Engage, because he recognizes. The value of acknowledging when a fan's having a good time, and he's like got those practice moves where he's playing, he looks down, he points out, he'll do the smile thing or whatever, or he'll be like, "Yeah, I see you, I see what you're doing."
Well, that's the thing too is like that is the thing that I think that is the thing that creates a connection with you and the audience. In part, is the notion, and that's what makes live events significant. Is I see you, you see me. Mm-hmm. I see people singing my music along with me. Like, this is this stadium, this bar, this coffee house, whatever. This is our car, and we are going somewhere together, and we are all listening to the same motherfucking soundtrack, and that is an awesome feeling. That, to be fair, I have never had. That's not true, actually. When I have played covers, and people will sing along. But one day, I will play to a group of people who sing along with my own songs and with Kaylee's songs, and that will be a good effing day. But it's not today, and I'm okay with that.
We've kind of transitioned topics because we started off talking about seeing live music, but as I pointed out at the top of the show, you and I fall on a different sides of the spectrum where you've played live music more than I have. I mean, my experience, it's limited to high school and karaoke. In high school, I was in the junior and senior bands, which is like the concert bands. I played tuba. I flirted with playing trumpet and trombone and all that jazz. So I'd sign the instruments out for like a weekend and learn. Yeah. But I was a tuba player all the way through. Started in grade 6, played grade 6, grade 7, skipped grade 8 when I came back to Canada because they don't have that in public schools. Mm-hmm. And then 9 all the way through my victory lap of high school, I played tuba.
Nice.
And I was a part of the band all the way through. And
I know a lot of tuba players.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
just one of them actually owns a tuba, FYI. Not one.
Yeah.
Tubas are expensive, I get it.
They're expensive. I remember playing in the concerts and whatnot, and playing in a group that size, I imagine, is probably significantly different than performing.
That's my understanding of it, yeah. I've never played in a group larger than 4.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of experience with that.
Yeah. So when I was playing, and especially because I was a tuba, we didn't have solos. So I was always in a supporting role, is probably the wrong phrase, but it was always in the collective. We all played together to create one, sonic experience. And so my experiences were always tailored to that. I was a part of the group. We were all conducted by one person who gave us the direction that we needed. But it was always a very fun experience. It always validated all those early morning practices that the bands had to go through. And, I mean, we did the processions and whatnot for graduation ceremonies. We went to competitions. We played concerts, like the Christmas concerts and whatnot. And then a few on the road. When I was in middle school, we did pre-marching band stuff where the band would go and sit in the bleachers at a football game and we'd play the songs, but we never actually took the stage to march. I would have if I did high school down there, but and then that's the core of my live experience. And then I did karaoke, which is a solo experience, but it's a little different. It's still music, but not really. I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to parse it out, but that's the limit of my playing live experience.
My thing with karaoke, and I have done a lot of karaoke too, as you were well aware, we did a podcast on karaoke back in season 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My thing with that is that I don't singing karaoke is in a group of people, like even in a group of people that, you know, in a bar is like watching YouTube videos with a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. Everyone is laughing at the YouTube videos, but they're not thinking about the video. They're not thinking about the thing that's actually happening. They're thinking, oh, I know what video to show next. And in karaoke, it's the same sort of thing. It's that everybody is sort of, they're doing their own thing. They're looking for their own songs. They're you know, they're drinking, they're whatever. Like, your music is sort of incidental. And that seems neat, but it seems, and I like it because it takes a lot of the pressure off. You know, it's one of those things that people often feel a lot of pressure around karaoke. Mm-hmm. And there isn't, because not a lot of people care, and the people who do care are dicks. Anybody who's going to judge you for your karaoke singing is an asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, way to screw up that T-ball hit, man. Thanks for that. I had a very tragic T-ball experience as a child. But, no, for me, like, I played one live show when I was 16. It was very, very small. And it went okay. I don't really remember much of it. But I was sufficiently embarrassed by it that I did not do so again, and would not until I was in grad school. Mm. And I played... I'd recorded a bunch of music that summer, and I played a Movember benefit at Maxwell's Music House. Because somebody had asked me, and I went, I have a guitar. Yes. Yes, I will. I was nervous as hell. But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. We connected with the audience. And don't remember much about it. There's a video somewhere. There's definitely a video somewhere. I think it might be on my old channel. I'll try and hunt it up. It's not great, but it exists. And since then, I have basically played at every opportunity. Anytime somebody's like, hey, do you want... Like, I played with Argyle Speedo. I played with the Berliners, which were a jazz band. We started Wutsu Riot, and we've played... We're regulars at a couple of local open mics. We just played a Battle of the Bards. I don't know what our next gig is. We've played at speaking events and art shows and all kinds of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. any opportunity I have to just pick up a guitar and go somewhere, I will usually go. Mm-hmm. I joke that I'm the only person they get to play at Alta Crea, the local nerd art show, because I'm the only one who will do a 90-minute set.
So you basically played as long as Sabbath did.
Yeah, only not nearly as well as Sabbath. I also didn't play any Sabbath. I'm just a dude with an acoustic guitar and an awesome, awesome musical partner. But, yeah, there the experience of playing live, for me, like, I've almost always been either solo or in a very small group. I mean, with the Riot, I am typically the lead. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I not run both guitar and vocals. There are definitely a few songs where I don't. And the amount of those songs is increasing. But there's for me, there's nothing better. I mean, I used to get it when I was on stage juggling and doing magic, and now I play music, and it fills me with energy. If you go back to that Battle of the Bards video, I am dying. I have the flu that weekend. I was 2 days into the flu, and I was hopped up on medication and lozenges and everything else. I had a pocket full of tissues, and I was just like, I just have to get through this 7-minute performance. And I almost did. The part I cut, which I don't know if I'll put it up on the channel, I certainly haven't by now, is there was a spot right at the end of Unconditional where my voice just gave out. And I did not have any more. And everybody loved it anyway. Mm-hmm. And we came out, we did the best that we could, which was still pretty good, I think, listening to it again. But it doesn't matter. Like, it filled me with energy. I love it. I'm like, yeah, next Bards, we're going to do cooler things. You know, we're not just going to play music. We're going to put out more energy. We're going to have a better show. We're going to, you know, maybe screw around with some improv or some props or that kind of thing. We don't know yet. Next Bards is a little ways away. It's probably not until, like, summer, October, Thanksgiving area. But like, it's that sort of energy. And the more of that energy we can give, the more we'll get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really sort of tangible relationship. But, yeah, playing live music is thinking about it makes me excited and happy. Because I don't do it enough.
No.
One day.
One day I might even join you.
Yeah, as our erstwhile fake bass player.
Yeah.
Like I said, man, when you start learning to play the bass, you're a real bass player.
I mean, and I've already appeared in one video.
Playing fake bass.
Playing
yes.
fake bass with a broken foot.
And you played real bass. You played real bass in the songwriting podcast.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
One day. Maybe next Christmas video.
Maybe.
But do you have any final thoughts on playing live music?
No, I mean, I've got a show coming up in April that I'm going to watch. Killswitch Engage is dropping a new album next month, and so they're starting their touring cycle. So
nice.
I'm going to go down to London and see them. I guess maybe one thing I would say from a watching music point of view is I know everybody's financial situations are a little different, but I would say that if you're looking at the prospect of going to a show, and you're like humming and hawing, like, do I want to go? Do I want to pay the ticket price? I would say that unless it is like prohibitively out of your capacity to pay for it, you really should do it at least once. And I've got two cases in my history where I couldn't justify the ticket. And they weren't that expensive, you know, like $25-$35. Because metal shows typically don't run very much. Even Sabbath was only like $60 or $80. You know, that's in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot. Like, you sometimes hear of really expensive, mm-hmm. you know, pop acts and whatnot, which all the more power to them if that's the market, if they can get money for it. But there was two times, once with Killswitch and another with a band that I followed, As I Lay Dying. Killswitch came through Kitchener when I was still in undergrad, second or third year, and I couldn't justify the ticket to myself. And then their lead singer, a couple years later, left the band. And Killswitch has had two vocalists. The original one who left, the one that I wanted to see who then left, and then the original guy came back to his role in the band. And they're very different vocalists, like, you know, in terms of writing style, in terms of the actual way they sing and scream. I really wanted to see Howard because he was the one that I got introduced to the band with, and now I'm never going to be able to see him perform unless he joins them on stage for some reason. And I've seen Killswitch with the original vocalist back, and I've loved every single show, but there's that little part of me that's like, I could have seen them back mm-hmm. in the day if I had just eaten the $35 cost. As a student, it felt like $35. It was such a frivolous thing to spend it on. And it's the same with As I Lay Dying. They were swinging through London. I could have gone to the show. And then, well, in this case, this is a slightly sadder story. The singer is now in jail because he tried to hire a hit guy to kill his ex-wife.
Very few things about that seem sad, actually. If you try and hire a hitman to kill your wife, jail is probably where you need to be.
But I really, really liked their music, and I really wish I could.
But jail is probably where you need to be.
Yeah, I really wish I could have seen the band before, because they didn't carry on the rest of the guys formed a new band, so there's a good chance I will probably never see them play live, and I really, really wish I could have seen them play live. I really enjoy their album music, and so really long-winded last thought, but my take-home message is, unless it is extremely prohibitively too costly, if you're ever looking at a show,
mm-hmm.
Just do it. I mean, I don't think you're ever gonna regret spending the money on something like that.
It's like travel. You're gonna have an experience. I mean, always go to shows within your budget.
Yeah.
And you know, your budget is the winner in all contests. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me it was George Watsky was touring and in Canada with his last release, Cardboard Castles. And I really love that album. Mm-hmm. And he came to Toronto, and I could totally afford to go. And it was like on my birthday weekend. And I found out about it with enough time to buy tickets. And I was like, oh, I'd have to go to Toronto. And I didn't go. Mm-hmm. And I have since seen George Washington. I saw him at VidCon. And he's awesome live. But that is a show I could have gone to, and I didn't. And I didn't because I was, like, not even because I couldn't afford it, but because I was lazy. Mm-hmm. And it was my pedestrian laziness that beat me out of that one.
Well, at least you got to redeem yourself.
Lucked out that he was headlining. He wasn't headlining. He played at the VidCon concert, but the headliners were We the Kings.
Okay.
But he was in there with Nice Peter and Epic Lloyd after Epic Rap Battles of History Live, mm-hmm. which are also really fun. Mm-hmm. So go and see live shows. Tell us about live shows that you've seen down below. Mm-hmm. Link to clips of them. You can see some of our live music in the show notes. We are also regulars at the KW Poultry Slam. If you want to come by and see us for live in person, you can even talk to us. I'll warn you, we are extraordinarily awkward people. Really awkward. Not saying don't talk to us, I'm just saying be aware when I stare at you with a look of panic and tell you I need a muffin. You don't have to buy the muffin. I'll buy the muffin. I did that one time.
And here's a five.
I just had no idea what to do. They're like, I really liked your song. I'm like, that's really cool. They're like, yeah, and you talked about, you know, issues relating to mental health. And I'm like, uh-huh. I need a muffin. I did get a muffin, and it was delicious, but it was really not how I should have handled that. But yes, you can come and see us, and we'll say hello to you. But in the meantime, we'll see you later.
Yep.
I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
We are signing off.
Show me your hands!
I knew you were going to do that, and I still couldn't. I just saw that happening in my mind and went, no. He's going to say something stupid like, stay musical.